And welcome to episode 2, part 2 of Philosophy of X here on the Aspect Network. I'm your host, Alex Batz, and I'll be your guide as we take a journey to examine the world of X-Men through philosophy. So, surprise, this is turning into a 3-part episode series. I thought that I would be able to get through both ethical pluralism and the ethics of collective punishment in one go, but during research and scripting, I reached a pretty clean stopping point in my discussions of ethical pluralism that should be right around the length that I want to try to keep these episodes at. So we'll be pushing the collective punishment discussion to a part 3. That said, since this is a part 2 episode in the series, I will be skipping the normal character breakdown segment of the show, wherein I give the pertinent background information on whatever character I'll be discussing, in this case, Magneto. If you are somehow listening to this and have not checked out part 1 of this now 3-part series about Magneto and the ethics of mutant liberation, definitely be sure to go give that a listen and then come back here for more on the discussion. In that first part, I lay out the need-to-know details about Magneto as a character and also dive into the ethics of just war theory and how those tensions are explored in a character like Magneto. For this second part, I'll be diving into the ethical pluralism that Magneto embodies, while I will be doing a part 3 that discusses and focuses on the ethics of collective punishment and how that applies to Magneto, I might end up pushing the paradox of power conversation to a different episode entirely. While it's an important facet of Magneto as a character, it's also something that can be applied to mutantdom as a whole, so if I do take this route, I'll likely make it an entire episode on its own. But in that episode, I will still make sure to carve out a section to cover its specific application to Magneto. Before I get into all of those details, as I did with the previous Magneto episode, I would like to give a couple of quick notes that I think are important, as well as some content warnings. So, content warnings first. I'll be covering anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, genocide, bigotry, murder, war, and related topics. These are heavy subjects, and I want to do my best to approach them with the appropriate level of sensitivity. So, with all of that said, let's dive right into the philosophy for this episode with ethical or value pluralism. Before I get into definitions and really unpacking these concepts and ideas, let's get some sources out of the way. As will be the case for most of these episodes, I'll be using the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy entries as a recurring source, and I'm also using pages from the Ethics Unwrapped website, which is a Texas EDU source. I'll have all of the pages that I used as reference reading linked down below, so you can check those out if you would like. Aside from those, here are some recommended reading if you're interested in learning more about ethical or value pluralism. Ethical Pluralism by Lawrence Bloom, The Challenge of Moral Pluralism, edited by John Horton and Susan Mendus, Ethics Without Principles by Jonathan Dancy, and Moral Tribes, Emotion, Reason, and the Gap Between Us and Them by Joshua Green. So, sources and references out of the way, let's get into some definitions. Ethical or value pluralism is, put simply, the idea that there can be conflicting moral views that are each worthy of respect and attention. The word pluralism generally refers to the view that there are many of the things in question, whether it be concepts, discourses, viewpoints, etc. In regards to moral pluralism, it's concerned specifically with the idea that there are many different, often conflicting, moral values, hence why it's also referred to as value pluralism. It's important to note that moral value pluralism is different from political pluralism. Political pluralism is a view often associated with political liberalism and is concerned with the question of what sort of restrictions governments can put on people's freedoms to act according to their values. While political pluralism can stem from moral value pluralism, for instance, basing political ideals on what is established through moral value pluralism, moral value pluralism is independent of political pluralism. It's also worth noting that moral value pluralism does not entail relativism. Put simply, moral pluralism resides in a middle ground between moral relativism and moral absolutism. Moral relativism is the idea that all ethical values or systems are equally true or valid. Essentially, that there is no one true or universal way to ascribe ethics and that any competing stance can be as valid as another. An easy way to understand this stance is through phrases like "to each their own" and "who am I to judge" when examining moral actions. Moral relativists would ascribe to the ideal that, quote, "when in Rome, do as the Romans do," end quote. Moral relativism is on the opposite end of the spectrum from moral absolutism, which posits that there are certain universal moral principles by which all people's actions may be judged. It's a form of deontology, which this brings us to three of the main theories in moral or ethical philosophy: deontology, consequentialism, and virtue ethics. Deontology is an ethical theory that uses rules to distinguish right from wrong. It's often associated with the philosopher Immanuel Kant. Kant believed that ethical actions follow universal moral laws, such as don't lie, don't steal, etc. Kant's categorical imperative is often cited as an example of this. His universality principle states that one should, quote, act only in accordance with that maxim through which you can at the same time will that it become a universal law, end quote. In other words, it means that if you do an action, then everyone else should also be able to do that action. Two easy examples would be if you lie, then everyone else should also lie, and logically, no one would want to live in that world. Or that if you murder, everyone else should also murder, and again, no one would want to live in that world. Therefore, according to Kant, both lying and murder are, in his view, categorically wrong in every circumstance. Deontology is often met with criticism in many ways because it fails to account for the consequences of actions. An example of this would be if lying could save a life or many lives, deontologists would still argue that you should not lie because lying is a universal moral absolute. So, while following deontology is easy to apply, as it's very straightforward, it doesn't account for the complexities of life and moral problems that we face. Consequentialism, in contrast, is an ethical theory that judges whether or not something is right by what the consequences of that action are. The easy example here is that most people would tend to agree that lying is wrong, but if telling a lie would save someone's life, a consequentialist would say that lying is the right thing to do in that instance. Consequentialism is met with criticism because it can sometimes be difficult or impossible to know what the results of an action can be ahead of time. There are also situations one could imagine where consequentialism can lead to morally objectionable actions, even though from a simple arithmetic perspective, consequentialism deems it the right path. This is often found in the classic quote, "the ends justify the means." An example would be that suppose it could be proven that enslaving 2% of the world population would lead to the majority of the planet being happier, healthier, and wealthier. This still doesn't feel like the right thing to do, though. From a straight consequentialist perspective, though, it makes sense. The third main ethical framework to highlight here is virtue ethics. Virtue ethics is a philosophy developed by Aristotle and other ancient Greeks. It is, generally speaking, the quest to understand and live a life of moral character. This character-based approach to morality assumes that we acquire virtue through practicing virtuous acts. Being honest, brave, just, generous, and so on will develop a person of honorable and moral character. According to Aristotle, by behaving virtuously consistently, a person will likely make the right choice when faced with ethical challenges. This ethical framework takes into account the moral complexities of various situations, but by that same token, it doesn't really provide a straightforward answer. It's much more of a you kind of know it when you know it type of feeling. It's a guide rather than a specific set of rules for resolving ethical dilemmas. So, to bring it back to ethical pluralism, it's hopefully already easy to see how we can arrive at different and conflicting moral frameworks. In regards to value pluralism specifically, philosophers take different stances on what a value even is, or if there is one or more ultimate supervalue. This divide is known as the monist versus pluralist stance. Monists believe that there is one ultimate value or good that all moral judgments and actions are based on, while pluralists argue that there are multiple competing or conflicting values that we then make judgments about and act on. To tie this back in with Magneto, let's take a look at some of his stances on ethical dilemmas. Through his actions, it's clear that Magneto does not take a deontological approach to ethics. He doesn't appear to believe in absolutes such as killing is wrong, especially when applied to humans versus mutant lives. Magneto, historically, values mutant life above that of humans. He's lived through multiple genocides, both through the Holocaust and also through the multiple genocides perpetrated against mutants. He views a conflict between humans and mutants as inevitable and takes actions according to that stance. This circles back into our conversation that we had last time regarding just war theory and Magneto feeling justified in his actions. This also puts him at odds with traditional ethical norms, especially in comparison to the X-Men, who typically hold a more conventional set of moral codes in accordance with nonviolence and coexistence with human beings. Magneto's experience as a Holocaust survivor, seeing firsthand the horrors that humans will inflict on a group that they've chosen to other, has only strengthened his resolve that he will do what he deems is necessary. Magneto, it seems on the whole, falls into a more consequentialist viewpoint. He often cites that the ends, mutant liberation and safety, justify the means, whatever violent acts it takes to get there. In recent years, though, we've seen him move between a consequentialist and virtue ethics stance. While Magneto will go further than the average person in the pursuit of his goals for mutant liberation and safety, we have started to see places that he won't go. Magneto will, at times, do all in his power to spare innocent human lives, some things he will not let happen if they are in his control. Magneto is painfully aware of the power he possesses and what his actions mean. In Resurrection of Magneto number 4, he ponders to himself, quote, "My action, my inaction, my conscious example, my unwitting inspiration. I help, I harm, I save life, I end it. What should my choice be? What is my responsibility?" End quote. Magneto spends most of this issue reflecting on the man he has been, what his actions have been for, and how they have been perceived, and those he has affected. Near the end of the issue, he says, quote, "Once I set myself apart from the world, on a place above it and above all the people in it. Homo superior, I called myself, and I played judge and jury for human and mutant alike in my clean white cape. And when the world I helped build was no longer to my liking, too much pain, too many compromises, I chose to wash my hands of it and walk away. I was wrong, and now I must make amends." End quote. It seems that Magneto has fully moved from a position of consequentialism, from the ends justifying the means, to a sense that it is more important to be virtuous consistently in his actions, to do the right thing solely because it is the right thing to do. He's fully aware of all the pain and suffering he has caused in his history. He knows the lives he's taken and the lives he's destroyed. One of the key tensions in the character is that he desperately wants to do what's right for mutantdom, but he's unsure of himself ever being capable of being a good man. He doesn't know if he's worthy of redemption, but he is certainly going to try. That said, it also seems clear, even through actions taken in the aforementioned Resurrection of Magneto number 4, that he will cross moral lines that others won't. He won't balk at murder. If it needs doing, Magneto will do it. This again highlights the moral pluralism that he operates in. There is no clear-cut answer. This also presents an interesting dilemma for those who support Magneto. Many mutants, and some humans, can easily sympathize with Magneto's cause, one for mutant liberation and safety, but they may take issue with the moral choices he then makes in the name of that cause. It's a typical point of conflict between him and the X-Men. Historically, it's the reason he finds himself at odds with them, and Charles Xavier specifically. Xavier and Magneto want the same thing, safety and prosperity for mutants, but often take radically different approaches to get there. Xavier often does not agree with the typical stance Magneto has taken in violent action to justify his ends. Once again, it's one of the major tensions at the heart of the character and highlights just how complex navigating moral landscapes can be. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Philosophy of X, and be sure to tune in next week as we continue to analyze Magneto, including diving more into the ethics of collective punishment. You can find me online at APBatman with 2 T's, and please be sure to subscribe here to The Aspect on YouTube and any platform where podcasts can be found. Please give us a like, leave a comment, and turn on that notification bell so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Twitter/X, Instagram, and TikTok at The Aspect Co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.